life is about me, son. I got 99 problems and a bitch ain't one.
And it goes a little something like, I like immigrants. Immigrants inspire me, man. They get here, they be so happy. They look up at the buildings like, wow, it's beautiful. And we go, you like it? Good. You gonna clean the bathrooms.
I'm from Texas. I'm from a little town called Racism. Sure you heard of it. Nice little place.
During the election, there was some lady from Ohio, and she was like, I'm afraid if Barack becomes president, his blacks just gonna take over. Like, that's a weird, like, you're gonna be giving a speech. I wanna say to all of the American people that I am your motherfucking president.
I'm more afraid of the trailer park than the ghetto. I'm not afraid of some black guy with 20-inch rims and gold teeth. I'm afraid of a redneck with a gun rack and no teeth. That's not fair.
Okay.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Hey.
Yeehaw, Sean. Welcome back to Hick Hop Radio. I'm Dustin Chafin and my co-host...
Kyle Grooms.
I was letting you bring yourself in.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were doing. I jumped right in there.
Missed you, man. How you been?
Did you Woo! Really? Been good, man.
Always miss you.
It was a good 2-week vacation.
It's good. It's good for
you
us
know,
to break it up a
lot of things happened, performed, you know, across the country.
Yeah, world went to
went
shit while you were
scuba diving. The world went to shit. Got a death threat. Everything was good.
You got
man.
A death threat?
Yes, I did.
About what? Your Trayvon comments or something?
Nah.
Trayvon post got you some trouble.
My
you and Yamanika.
My Trayvon tweets.
What happened?
I'm done with Trayvon already. Like, not Trayvon Zimmerman in trouble. Anyways, there she is. There's Allie. Allie's right there.
All right, you
lost.
Can just disappoint and go like this. All right, okay. Go ahead. Talk to me. We're live.
Well, yeah, man. I was performing in St. Louis at the Funny Bone, and I got a death threat for, like, one of the hackiest jokes in the business. I'm more upset that I got a death threat for a hack joke than something original. You know what I mean?
So you got a death threat. They wanted the money back? Was the show that bad?
Oh, you trying to be funny, huh, Dustin?
It is the goal here on the show.
Yeah. Okay, it's a comedy show. All right. Actually, it was a. Oh, the shows were hot, man. I had a real, real good time in St. Louis, man. The crowds came out to have a good time, but there was a bridal party in the front row.
Yeah.
And you know, I was having fun. My set was killing, so I said, "Hey, let me, you know, give the bride a little love. Let her feel a little sunshine." You know.
It was bridal party or bachelorette?
Bachelorette.
Okay.
Yeah.
Weren't married yet.
No, they weren't married. Okay. Yeah, it was a bachelorette party. She had the little glowing tiara with the lights on it and things. So I just said, oh, you're getting married, huh? When's the due date?
Yeah. Wait, you're not in yet.
Yeah, you ever been with a black man before? You know, the regular little goofy shit that you do, you know. And then I went on with my set and I got up. Then she got up and went to the bathroom when I came out. Well, first I found out that Zimmerman got off, and then I found out that that the lady was in the bathroom crying her eyes out, and her sister was screaming, "How could he humiliate her like that? You don't bring people to the shows and gang in," screaming at the manager.
Meanwhile, she's wearing a dick hat.
You
got like I got like dick shirts and dick hats. How could you humiliate her like that?
Yeah, but I think she was a little heavy. So she probably took it as a fat joke, saying when's the due date. But it wasn't a fat joke at all. It was a, you know, it was a joke about,
you
know what I mean? You're getting married, but it wasn't a fat joke. And she got upset.
Shotgun wedding joke.
Yeah, man. And her husband left this message on my answering machine.
On your answering machine? How'd he get your phone?
No, he left it on my agent's answer machine.
How did he get your agent's number?
Like, well, it's on my website.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And
what did he say?
I'll let you hear it.
Are you going to play it?
Yeah, I'll play it. When I came in, when I got home on Monday, my agent was like, "Hey, everything all right, man? I was, we got this. I think we need to get the police involved because you just got this hate message on your thing. A guy was threatening to lynch me and everything."
Wow.
And this was, you know, this is a sensitive week to talk about lynching a brother. You know what I mean? Here it goes.
All right, you got it? All right,
let's see. Talent agent is for that Kyle Grooms. If you want to take digs at my fiance, I'll be sure to shank your fucking ass and lynch you for 8 miles down the road while you wither in pain and die.
Wow.
So pass that along to him. If you ever come through St. Louis and I catch him again, be sure. I'll definitely be sure to listen for the announcement because I would love to come. Because let's put it this way, if he doesn't have a bodyguard with him, he's dead. So, got a lot of people in St. Louis. Just throwing that out there. So, good luck next time in your town.
Wow. Holy shit.
Yeah,
God,
man. Shit got real,
up.
Man.
That
shit
is
got real.
Up. You got to wear a bulletproof vest next time you're at the Funny Bone.
Yeah, jeez. My nephew heard that and he was like, what? Give me that nigga's number, yo. We're going to go see that nigga, yo. My brothers, all my family was like, yo, hell nah.
Do you have information on him?
Oh, yeah. He left his name. His name was on a caller ID. We got okay. I have a picture of him. His
Do
Facebook.
You really?
Yeah, we got his Facebook.
So you got okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah, and my agent reported it. You know what I mean?
Oh, really?
But okay. It was like a complete misunderstanding. I wasn't fucking embarrassing his wife. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's really messed up.
Yeah,
that's comedy's dangerous like that, man.
Yeah, man.
You never know what some psycho is gonna think.
Yeah.
And that's nothing. Like, that's actually, I mean, I've done way worse than that. I've, like, walked off stage, said cunt, and, like, kept walking.
This is the guy right here.
Oh, dude, that guy. Wow.
Look at this fucking guy, man.
So, yeah, so I think, A, she is a little bigger, and B, there must be another baby on the way. Because look at all them babies. They're not married yet?
Right? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so.
All right, Kyle.
That was
gangsta
my weekend.
Shit.
It was my weekend, man.
Let me know. I'll help you out. We need to go down there and take care of this guy.
Yeah, man. Maybe he knows some people. Maybe you know some people that he knows, you know, from your clan connects.
Absolutely. I'll make a phone call.
But get on the clan hotline.
Well, we've already discussed you. You're one of the good ones. You are.
You're on my
don't mess with us one list.
Yeah, yeah.
There's about five of them.
Yeah,
and you're on
you,
there.
Man.
There's five black dudes.
Brian Gumble.
We don't like him. He's a sellout.
Who else?
Yeah, we don't like him. There's a couple dudes.
Who else on the sellout list? I don't want to be on that list, Dustin.
So you're not on the sellout list.
I
want to
be on that list.
You're on the protect. We don't mess with you. Don't mess with Kyle Grooms. Talk to my Zip Coon.
Zip Coon.
All right, should we bring in our guest, our fabulous comedy
Absolutely.
Guest today? All right, you want to do it or you want me to? I'll do it.
Oh, yeah.
A great guest today. Let's start to my left here. Young comedian that I've known since he was 16, because he used to go up
Sounds
as a 16-year-old comedian.
He was 16.
Yeah, I met him. met him online.
I mentored him.
met him
online.
He thought I was a 15-year-old girl, and an old dude in a cowboy hat showed up. I said, hey, kid, you want to do some comedy? Eat some candy. Very funny. Met him at the Times Square Art Center, which used to be the Laugh Factory, which we all miss that place, which is now a haunted house. You walk in and there's Jason with a chainsaw and like, oh my goodness. We'll talk about it in a minute. Anyway, very funny comedian. Saw a lot of potential and it's fun. Been fun watching him grow over the years. I guess I've known you about four years now.
Yep.
It's grown in. Very funny guy. You can see him on this season's Guy Code. Let's see what else. Wild and Out on MTV. Just got back from the Montreal Comedy Festival. Please make some noise for Pete Davidson, everybody, in the house, in the buildings.
Thank you for having me.
Yay. And cool, we'll get to our next guest. Also a very funny lady that I've known forever, a long time. Very good friends, actually, over the years in comedy. And met you at probably every comedy club I can think of, every bar and shit gig in New York. I'm sure we've probably shared together. You've known me through my drinking days and my sober days, my crazy girlfriends and good girlfriends, and very funny. She just got back from the Montreal Comedy Festival as well. Give it up for Allie Breen, everybody.
Allie.
Yay.
Thank you, guys.
Yay. You found us.
I know, sorry. I was a bit late.
We saw you pacing back and forth. Yeah. Like, where is it? Where
in a panic. Where's the show? I don't know where I'm supposed to be.
Did you get on the right train and get off the right train?
I got on the right train. And you know what's funny? Speaking of our history together, Peter, I can't remember his last name, one of the guys who did was at the first open mic I've ever done, rode his bike right by me. So I had to stop and talk, but I was I can't talk. But I have to stop. This is the weirdest thing ever. I can't. You would know him, and I can't think of his last name.
Yeah. Girls have a hard time shaking guys on the street.
It's hard just, to get away.
Yeah,
you want to get all caught up.
Yeah, exactly.
So
they all want to say, hey, what's up? How you been?
Like, oh, yeah, guys just give the nod, and they just walk along. Yeah, it's so much easier.
Yeah, I saw Kyle. We're on the damn show together. I was like, hey, what's up? I'm going to go in.
Yeah, that's it.
We don't have to stand there and talk.
See you upstairs.
Yeah,
you guys could play golf all day together. And I'd be like, how's Kyle? I don't know.
He's all right. He's doing his thing.
Yeah. Seems cool. Seems cool.
Working on some Zip Coon bit.
Tell you, that might be the name of my next album.
Oh, it's got to be. And you got to be dressed up like Zip Coon.
I'm not dressing up
like
Zip
Coon. Yes, you are. No, come on, you have to. That's the
idea of the joke is I don't want to be a Zip Coon. Do you know what I mean?
A Mr. G. Bell.
I want to be a
dude, but you still embrace it. Chappelle dressed up like people that he made fun of.
That's the bit that made him leave the show.
Zip Coon.
That's the one that put him over the edge.
Yeah, that's what put him over the edge when he was dressed up. In blackface, like a Zip Coon.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay.
It was called the Nigga Pixie sketch.
Ah,
yep. Wow.
I still got the script at home. Yeah. It was the last sketch that he
was. Oh, you're supposed to be in it?
I was in it.
Oh, you were?
Yeah. And they aired it, too. They aired it with the third season with Charlie Murphy and Donnell hosting.
Did they play it?
Yeah, they played it. Okay. They played it.
And he
it
really said sketch. That was the one that put him over the edge? He said that was
yeah,
the one
he was
did
saying
it.
That he was dressed. The way he was dressed, one of the people on the staff laughed.
But didn't he write the sketch or no?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, you know. But it's like, but you know how comics, just because it's funny to us doesn't mean it's socially responsible.
That's a good point. Once other people laugh,
like,
sometimes you're like, that's
like
not
I
for you guys.
I remember once wanting to dress up like the Klan for Halloween, just because I thought it would be funny. But I guess I was a teenager. Do you know what I mean?
One time I went to a Mormon Halloween dance and dressed as Charles Manson, and I had like blood on my shirt.
Oh, you could
like,
get away. You could definitely get away with that.
You went hard. Yeah. You went really hard on that one.
I didn't have the swastika, though. That was the only thing.
You wanted to.
I did.
Yeah, like I was on Fort Lauderdale Beach once during Halloween, and there was some guys in a pickup truck dressed like a Klan beating a black dude.
Jesus.
And the black dude. And I remember thinking it was funny because, you know, sometimes you got that sick sense of humor, especially, you know, I was young.
What's messed up is to dress as a racist, you just have to look like a Family Guy now, apparently. That picture was sick. The guy's got kids and a wife on his arm, and he's spouting out the most racist epithets.
Go shake your ass till you bleed and wither in pain and die.
Jesus.
Yeah, I think Chappelle and Brennan just also had creative differences because they're not tight like they were. I think it had something to do with that as well. And he just blamed it on one sketch, but there was more going on. You don't just leave something like that for one little thing. I think it was building, I think.
Yeah, they were weird around each other this week.
Really?
Yeah, it was a little weird.
Montreal Comedy Festival?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't talk much. It's very distant.
They respect each other, but they're not hanging out at the end of the day.
And that's what happens. I think Chris Rock said that when he did his show on HBO, it stopped being fun. And I think that's what happens to some of these guys. It starts out like we're friends, we're doing a thing. It almost feels like it's just a sketch.
It becomes a job.
Yeah.
It's a job.
And then it just becomes too much pressure, and you got suits involved and all that shit. And then, you know, and then one wants to be.
But from what I hear from Neil, he said he had creative control. They could do what they wanted to do, really. That's what I heard from Neil. But, you know, it's one side of the story.
No, I've heard both sides, even some printed stuff that they didn't get along. So
I've heard that I want both of them to like me, so I'm not going to say anything.
I say no comment.
It's out there. It's a real thing. No, I was with Chappelle right before he went to Africa, man. He was at the Boston Comedy Club. We smoked a joint.
We smoked a joint.
No, pretty much. We smoked a joint in his car right that same night, right before. I was hanging out with him the whole night. And it was crazy. You could tell he was getting so freaked out by fan response. And that was the thing. Like, these four Irish dudes, like, just freaking out. They're like, rich bitch, blah, blah. And they, like, took off their soccer jerseys, and they're like, sign this, and, like, just in his face and touching him and stuff. And it was, you know, you could see it just getting too much for him. You know, yeah. Well, I think it's just like he just you know, I think because he's really just a comic, dude. He just wants to be just wants
all
to get
that
up.
Extra,
and,
yeah, Dave's yeah. not the he's not hour. Kevin Hart. Like Kevin Hart's
yeah.
open. Like
Kevin, Kevin loves it.
Jump into a fan.
Yeah,
he loves it.
But I don't think Dave
Chappelle's
is that dude.
New hour was the whole talk of the whole.
Really? Yeah, that's what yeah. I was gonna ask. Murdered. What were the highlights of the festival?
Did you go and see Chappelle?
Unfortunately, I wasn't able to because the tickets either. They weren't letting. Like that's how
you could your pass couldn't get you in.
Like
that not
so
to
much,
that show. Yeah.
Somebody was saying negative things about it. You said it was good. You heard good things.
I heard the only thing that I heard negative about it was that he came out an hour late, and then somebody like complained like when he got on stage and was like, "Come on, man!" And he was like, "You guys mad that I came out an hour late?" And then the guy was like, "Yeah," and he was like. Well, I wasn't doing anything. I was just sitting in the back, just hanging out, waiting to go up. And everybody's like, "What the fuck, dude?"
Just oh, playing Angry Birds.
Yeah. But other than that, I heard the material was great. Every wow. comic I spoke to was like, "It's everything you ever wanted to see from Chappelle." So I can't wait. I hope I get to see it.
I wonder what he's talking about now.
It's all family.
All family, really? Thing.
Yeah. Like I heard the bits, not the but you know topics like. Teaching his 8-year-old son about pussy because he said it at a show and he didn't know his son was there. And
oh, wow.
Explained
what's
to it.
Pussy, Dad?
Yeah, yeah. So it was, I heard a bunch of great things about it.
I always hate that sometimes.
And I heard Dane Cook's new hour is ridiculous.
Really?
Like, ridiculous.
All right, now you're going too far. Now you're kissing too much ass.
Nah, but people always get on Dane, but I always thought Dane was a good comic. I remember I've laughed hard at Dane a lot.
Dane's fun.
At the Laugh Factory in L.A. But then I guess... You know, when you have to do 2 and 3 tours and back
to
back.
We have to do 8 specials. I mean,
yeah, maybe it gets a little watery and then you go back to your source and find your power.
Right.
He took some time off and he got his,
I knew that would probably happen, though, since now he's not as popular.
Yeah.
That's usually when people become better comics.
He's got his money now.
People don't go out to see him anymore like they used to.
Yeah, he knew he had, because like he was like at the after party, he just had like this sick suit on, had like a, t-shirt and everybody else had t-shirts. He had this like nice...
Tailored,
really talking about his suit.
Tailored, showed his silhouette pretty good.
Yeah. Well, Louis made him a joke, so then he realized it's like he can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, he can't just recycle people's material and jump around and be an idiot, and people still get into it because people don't like him like they used to. I mean, I saw him at the Garden; it was unbelievable. Had free tickets, I wouldn't just. But
you waited in line.
I didn't pay for that shit. But it was unbelievable.
I'm connected, but it was unbelievable. The way he performed. And like he did a freaking encore.
Yeah.
He did an encore. He came back on stage. Unbelievable. But I'm just saying, I think all the hardship of like everybody thinking he's a hack and with the Louis C.K. stuff made him probably just become a better comic. And the fact that people don't line up like they used to also made him kind of like, you know, has some introspective on his material. And like, you know, now it's just... I feel like he's a real comic. Before it was just like, he was too much into being
moving
Dane Cook.
And like, style he had.
Yeah, look
and
at
that
me.
A bunch of other comics tried to like imitate just being.
Yeah.
You can't blame him though. If people just laugh at everything you do, you just go out and do whatever, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think they do that anymore though. I think a lot of people are harder on him.
People are getting more.
Because he would go to comedy clubs and bomb his ass off lately. And you know, there was a lot of stuff about it because he was working it out. And
his audience grew up too. I think he's like a teen band, like you know what I mean, like a teen.
Dude, you remember how big Pauly Shore was? Pauly Shore was the biggest comic on the planet. Yeah. Like you're young, you have no idea. He was huge.
He creeped me out when
he
I
was
know.
Like,
yeah, he is big. So creepy.
Dude, Ricky was huge.
Yeah.
Ricky has
he's
the best story
down,
about
real.
Him. Ricky Velez, a good friend of mine. He brought Pauly Shore up. He did the Broadway for one.
Oh
night,
yeah, I remember that.
And he grabbed his face and he went youth. And then like and everybody in the crowd was just like what and Ricky had like Ricky couldn't sleep for like 3 days.
Oh, shit.
Like Ricky was calling me, he was like, youth, what does that mean?
That was great.
Is he trying to
that's
tell me
awesome that it will end. That it will end. That's exactly what he was saying. Because he and his youth was one of the biggest comics in the world. He
and
was
I
huge.
Still think people will still come out and see him.
Oh, yeah. He gets numbers.
Yeah, but he's got more numbers. Like that screech audience. It's not like, you know.
He's like a gimmick.
It's people who want a picture with him. That's what his audience is.
When I first moved to L.A., actually, when I was at the Comedy Store for the first time, he came in when the host was on stage. And the host said, "Hey, Pauly Shore, everybody." And everyone turned around and then just turned back and watched the show.
Oh.
No one one gave a shit. It was it brought the show down. In fact, so only in certain places people still come out to see him, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, some people, you know. I mean, I remember we talked about this last week, like Sinbad and, you know, certain people just were the biggest things in the world, and then just kind of, and some people were able to keep it going, you know, keep like find new audiences and stuff. That's what I always liked about Carlin. I saw Carlin live like 5 times, and every time I go to a Carlin concert, it was always like 15, 20-year-olds, you know, 22-year-olds, like the audience kept getting younger, as opposed to certain guys like Robert Klein, where it's everybody's 60, you know, that kind of thing. But with Carlin, it was like, it was always young people regenerated in the crowd every time. It was young. Rickles is like that too, like young guys, young people come out, you know, and start a new audience for him, and I think that's great.
Yeah, I think Louis C.K. gets a young audience too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Bill Cosby. He's got a special on Comedy Central coming.
Wow. That.
Yeah. Because I want to catch him live, but, you know, Comedy Central, next best thing.
Yeah.
We'll go. Check him out. Where's the film? Do you know? Is it New York?
Oh, I don't know when they're taping it or if they even taped it already. Did they tape it already?
We can get connections.
It's going to air, you know?
I can get that. We can
get Dustin's the man on the street.
I'll hook it up. I got radio connections and shit. We'll get it in there.
So how were your sets at Montreal Alley and Pete?
First time, both of you, right?
First time, new faces. Were you both on the same showcase?
No, because we were different new faces. I was unwrapped and he was regular new faces. Right. There's like a new category.
Oh, yeah, unwrapped. Like people who are out. Like orphans, orphan comedians.
That is completely what it is. People who have no one.
They do a PSA for you before.
We're like these abused, pets.
I don't know.
Will anyone take these guys?
These don't have representation.
I don't know about you, but like I felt it was, everybody had a good set, but it was a very industry like crowd.
Exactly, so
like, an industry crowd. They laugh for 2 seconds and they're like, "All right, what's next?"
They're all taking notes during your set. Yeah, like when I was watching, you see everyone's iPad on.
Yeah, when other people were on stage, you would see people writing and things like that. So it wasn't like a genuine type crowd, and that's what, you know, really. It was good though. Everybody did really well. You know,
who were the standouts for the new faces?
I think Sam Morrell really had
Sam Morrell
great. And Chris DeStefano really did great.
They really had great
sets. But everybody as a whole, nobody had bad. Nobody did bad. Deserved and did great.
No one ate.
You know,
ours was cool. Exactly the same. Yeah, it was very level. No one really killed. No one bombed. It was never awkward, which was good. But. Yeah, and then people said nice things afterwards. That was the only way to gauge it, because there's nothing great.
That's how you gauge it. When you go back to, because everybody meets up at the Hyatt, the hotel, after, and the only way you could tell is if, because every industry would be like, hey, good set, or, you know, that's the only way you could really gauge.
Right, when people approach, or if you met someone, oh, I saw you the other night, you did great, that kind of thing. Otherwise, you don't really know who's paying attention.
It wasn't like, we're going to sign you, you're going to be a star.
Right, there was no line coming out the Hyatt. Where is Halle Brittwer?
No, but everybody did their thing. It was cool.
Yeah.
It's changed a lot. I know some people. I remember Todd Lynn. He got a check while he was there.
He was the last big guy. That's what people were saying. Yeah.
he got a check while he was there. Came home.
Like, here you go, man. We're signing you right here. And just
is that what made him turn into Todd Lynn? Is that what made him
become? He was a dick when he was broke, playing clubs. Yeah, he didn't change him.
At least he never changed.
But Todd wasn't like, when I met Todd, he wasn't mean. He was a little nicer. I think he just got a little more ornery as he got older.
I love Todd. Todd was a good friend of mine.
Yeah, Todd. Yeah.
Todd you didn't never...
Recently, right?
Like the last 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Like 3 years now.
He got really sick. Last time I saw him,
Todd was always respectful to me. He never... A lot of people hated him, but I liked Todd.
Yeah, he was cool to me.
But he ripped it up out there in Montreal. And, you know, and his whole thing was like... I loved his... Nobody knew who he was in New York before he got Montreal, really. And then he asked for a check spot on the Montreal audition, wasn't even on the audition, and just ripped up a check spot, and then they put him on the show as new faces, and he was like 38.
So
it's like his whole story is great. And he got on new faces, was a check spot, which I'm like, fuck you, all you kids that don't want to do checks. And then he just, you know, rips it up and then gets Montreal and then gets all the sitcom money and all this stuff, the Wayne's show and all that stuff. So he really, I don't know.
Well, that's a good argument. Because people always claim that the game's rigged. You know, even going to Montreal, people's like, it doesn't matter. They know who they want. They know.
It is rigged to an extent.
There's some people they definitely know, but there's definitely some spots that are open to anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's some people. I mean, there's a very, you know, there's a bias to Montreal, to a sense. there's a little bit of what you look like, a little bit of your age, a little bit of like manager to manager kind of connection, kind of you do this, I'll do this for you. There's a lot of that.
And
going
they
on.
Have people that they're friendly with. Yeah, there's certain people I see in Montreal.
Yeah, there's certain
every
cliques.
Year.
There's cliques around Montreal.
Like every year,
like it's comedy summer camp, and there's like cliques of people that hang out with each other. But like I even said, I was because Colin Quinn, I was like, I'm having a great time, and he was like, yeah, you should have been here 20 years ago. But other than that, it was fun.
You're like, I would have been negative three. Did you?
Yeah, did you get to see
Did you hear his speech or his
thing? Unfortunately, you could drink in Montreal when you're 18 and I'm 19.
Okay,
so
we'll go to
I
Allie
was not
then.
Awake. I was not awake when he was doing his speech.
Wow.
But I heard he killed.
Allie, how was it?
So good. And it's funny because my flight over got canceled and I ended up on the flight with Colin and like Amy Schumer and Norton and Opie and Anthony. Mm-hmm. My whole flight was comics. And Colin hadn't, he was like, I've barely even written this speech. He was like trying to, run ideas by people. He was like, does anyone have any ideas? I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know. So it was hilarious. So then it was one of the best speeches I've ever seen. I thought it was so good. Have you guys listened to it on Laughs?
Yeah, I read a little bit of it.
Oh, it's so good. He's just Colin, like, I love him. I love how he talks. I love his comedy. And he just put that into, this keynote speech, which was just tearing down everybody. So it was tearing down comics and clubs and TV. And then he had inspirational stuff as well.
That was a little hard on the club. I think sometimes, I understand where he was going with it, but, it's like, it's also, the place that spawned you. You know what I mean? Like sometimes we're just going to have to deal with the drunk guy and the thing. And sometimes I felt like, I don't know, it's like clubs get a bad rap with some of the celebrity guys, like Judah's going on this petition thing for check spots. And sometimes I think it's easy for celebrities to kind of like look down and be like, hey, comedy should treat me better in comedy clubs. And, I shouldn't have checks and shouldn't have drunk people in there.
Yeah, what's the check spot petition thing all about?
Yeah, what is that?
Judah Friedlander.
To get rid of him?
I was supposed to call him, actually.
It was nice to see Judah. There was a lot of people I hadn't seen in so long, which was great.
Yeah, it's, he's basically just feels like, okay, I'm at the mechanic. This is Judah Friedlander. I will try, so I might call him and we'll ask him. Anyway, I guess he's wanting to do a petition to take away the check spots at comedy clubs. And so, that no comic gets a check spot at a comedy club. And so, because he's, you know how it is. We're on stage and, all of a sudden checks come in and then it's like you're distracted. Audience is distracted. I get it. But I also, running a club, it's like you would basically have to take an entire show away from the club. Like, in order to do that, you would have to, lose the late show because it's all about turning over the room and all that stuff. There's no way in hell you can
do
that.
Wait, he wants people to not drop checks.
After the show, give people the
check. Some comedy clubs will do it. Like, I know Vinny in Stress Factory, he won't drop checks till the end of the show.
Right.
And some clubs, they wait. But some clubs don't have the time, especially if you're
Manhattan clubs.
Yeah, if you're doing three.
We got four shows. Boom, 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 boom. We ain't got time for that.
Anybody got time for that?
We got to get it going. But I like what Colin said. He said some good stuff, just about, the development of comedy, with the comedians themselves. And sometimes the clubs, I think a lot of the mainstream clubs do have a tendency to kind of, overlook people that don't, get laughs right away and don't have, that setup punch, boom, boom, boom with the crowd, which is tough because I think it should be a place for comics to develop. But at the same time, people have an expectation when they come to see a show.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's two totally different perspectives, and both perspectives make sense, actually. It's just where you're coming from. But you're right. Both people are right. It's hard to say because you can't have a show where everyone is trying new material where the audience is just not entertained.
Like, now I understand what he's saying, but I did check spots the first 2 years and it helped me drastically.
Absolutely.
So, me too. I started doing them too.
I never really had a problem with
check spots. Yeah, so I don't. PD, I still do them.
PD, our intern, he does them, and he does really well. It's funny. I think there's different types of shows for different types of comics.
And it's also that thing when you start doing check spots, and there's always that moment when you get your first regular spot, and it's just it really feels good. So it's a part of growing in comedy, I think.
Absolutely. You have to have that moment. I was talking to somebody about the American Idol stuff, and somebody saying that I guess it was Kool and the Gang and Lionel Richie, and they were all kind of trashing the show, saying a lot of these guys just get it. this instant exposure. They never had to play like a shitty gig in like, you know, Oklahoma, you know, at a bar where nobody's paying attention. They never had to play like the Holiday. Like, they were basically going off on how, like, you know, there's no dues paid. And a lot of these guys just get instant exposure. So I think the dues make you funny or make you better, make you, you know.
Yeah, because I think if you're a professional comic, you should be used to a check spot. It's like a maybe a 5-minute break in what you in your comfort zone. And you just got to focus.
Yeah.
And there are some people that are still listening. So you just perform for them and just try to black it out and keep it moving.
And it makes you appreciate comedy. Like, yeah. You're doing check spots.
I mean, there's other ways to do stuff. Like, you know, in Sweden, they have intermission. And, you know, there's basically no check spot. You get your drink before the show. There's an intermission. And yeah, that's your second like drink. And then after the intermission, the closer comes on. And then, boom, that's, you know, I mean, it's a little time-consuming, but you just...
Yeah, our attention spans can't handle
that. And that breaks up the flow of the show. Yeah.
It does.
I mean, everything
it works
is
for them, though, because they're so used to it.
Yeah, of course, they're used
they'll
to
go,
it.
And then the headliner will come up after the break, and then he finishes, and it's good.
I had a hard time, you know, trying to get him back after that, because I feel it did break the flow. Like, you're like, okay, let's do it again. You ready? You know, and then it's like, ugh. But, you know, I don't know. There's just... It is a booze-selling business, and unfortunately, that's what pays the rent, you know? We can't just, you know, five Comedy Central guys won't sell out a room. That's just the truth, you know? And even Judah or even whoever, it's like people don't come out unless you're fucking Kevin Hart or, you know, somebody like that. And if you're complaining about the comedy clubs, then maybe you should play in theaters. I remember when Lisa Lampanelli said, I'm not doing theaters anymore. I remember when Brian Regan at Caroline said, I'm not doing comedy clubs anymore. I'm doing just theaters. Because they probably were tired of that whole comedy club thing. But move on. You don't complain about the place that spawns the talent. And, you know, it's like, come on. I just think
I might do that. Just give up comedy clubs. Just do theaters.
movie
theaters. I'd be an usher.
I would do one show every 5 months.
That'll be one quarter full.
Start promoting now for December.
Comedy clubs are awesome. And even the shitty ones and even the cheesy ones, even the crappy ones, because what it's doing is it's saying, hey, it's promoting stand-up comedy to people and reminding them that this art form exists. Because people don't, it's not like what it was anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's a step up from karaoke when it comes to people actually going out to see comedy. It's not the thing on the list anymore.
Right.
So we have to, we're constantly going, hey, man, come in, let's see this. Then they see a guy that they never would have seen if there wasn't a club promoting comedy. Because, you know, I think it's important to have that. Just that bright light going, hey, it's over here. Don't forget us.
Well, you're saying people used to just go to comedy clubs because they knew it was comedy.
Yeah,
and now
they don't
do
that anymore.
Because it's,
Well, there's so much entertainment out there, too, especially
Gabriel
in New York.
Iglesias is
going to
be there.
Options. Yeah.
Or, you know, people with the draws. Gabriel Iglesias and who else? Some people got, you know.
No, there is draws, and there are people that actually will go out to a show, and there's probably a top 15 list that people will go out and, you know, buy tickets.
Sebastian Maniscalco. I've opened for some people that I didn't even know of that had huge draws before. But you know what? The check spot in New York's so different than the rest of the country. It's so important here because it showcases, and it's the only way new comics will get time on a show, because that is how I started too. So I agree with that. In New York, for sure, the check spot needs to exist. Some of the big headlining clubs, I guess I understand the point, but you're right, you can't pack in more shows if you're not doing a check spot.
If it's a showcase show, that I think there should always be a check.
Always.
Like if somebody's doing a weekend and it's just like him and a feature and an opener, then I understand if there's no check spot because that's his thing. But if it's just a showcase, like that's how I got up.
And new comics will line up for that spot, actually. I mean, I had people tell me to kill myself during that spot, and I still showed up the next day for another one, you know?
No, I remember the comic strip. I was only passed for check spots. And I did check spots for 2 years. That's all I did. And eventually, you know, I started killing checks. And I never complained. I was so happy to be at the strip. And then eventually, you know, they saw me one night doing better than the guys that were doing regular spots who had it way easier. And then eventually they moved me up, you know, because of that work. And that's a lack of, some of the young comics don't understand that at all. And the fact that, you know, let's maybe go to break here in a minute and see if we can get Judah on the phone. I'd like to talk to him about it. So we're going to do a musical break, and we're going to try to get Judah Friedlander on the phone. See what he says about chick spots.
Chick spots.
Hiccup Radio. Sean. Welcome back to Hick Hop Radio. I'm Dustin Chafin, back with my co-host Kyle motherfucking Coops.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to wash this spit guard on the mic, man.
What happened?
This shit is humming.
Is it humming?
It smells like somebody had a hot sausage or something. I don't know what it smells like.
Hot sausage.
Like a number two with cheese, extra onions and mayo, my nigga. Shit is
shit, don't say the N-word this week. Hot. Can't say the N-word this week. You told us. You told us we couldn't say it.
Yeah, since Zimmerman got off, we can't say the N-word.
Yeah, I didn't get to talk to you about that. I don't know if that's a good topic.
Yeah, I mean.
I'm
so over race. Yeah, the racial Super Bowl is over. You notice every 15 years, we have a racial Super Bowl in this country. Like, it's like the O.J. trial.
Yeah.
The L.A., the Rodney King trial.
Absolutely.
It's always, it's just like the Super Bowl. Play-by-play,
except somebody dies. That's
they say the black community, black community.
You don't get a really funny Budweiser commercial out of it.
I'm just really
the halftime show isn't as good.
No.
I'm just glad he wasn't white because that would have been hard.
Zimmerman is white to me.
No, he's not.
He's white to everybody. I don't fully understand.
He's as Spanish as your girlfriend.
But. Nah. His mother's Peruvian or something, and that's it. His father's white. And anyway,
he's not
Miami.
Really, is Obama white?
Yes, he's mixed.
Yeah, but you embrace him as a black man. Yeah, you do not embrace him as a white man.
It's his mentality. He has a white man's mentality, brother. That's because, like, Cubans in Miami consider themselves.
Don't generalize him for us.
Yeah,
don't do that. Don't do that. He's an idiot, but he's an individual idiot.
Yeah.
Like, and Florida is fucked up with their, gun-toting laws, but don't put that on white
people. I don't know if he's racist
or
not.
That's what's fucked up.
But I don't even know if he's racist or not, but
he's racist.
He profiled and he made a mistake. And I think he should have at least been charged with manslaughter or some kind of criminal negligence or something because, he did approach the dude. And maybe not approached him, but he followed him.
Like, whether it was an accident or not, he still killed somebody.
He killed someone who was unarmed, who had Skittles and a friggin' iced tea, and he was a teenager. So you got a grown man shooting down a kid. You're supposed to have some responsibility,
And they gave him his gun back, which is really... I thought that was really fucked up.
They actually took it back.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they're taking it back.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I feel better.
But, it's horrible what happened, and it's definitely injustice. However, how many times...
And no, ain't no however. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
How many times...
Ain't no however, Dustin.
Ain't no howevers. Ain't shit you can say after that.
Get a rope. Now, the thing is, it's how many, innocent guys are in jail because the jury said guilty, So it's, it's not right, but by any means. And he was getting attacked. Now whether he should have been there is the huge question. He shouldn't have been.
Well,
he shouldn't have got out of the car. He shouldn't have whatever. But you're still not allowed to beat somebody to death either. Yeah.
He should have used the fight like a man law.
He should have used that. Yeah, he should have fought like a man. But he thought he was going to die, so he shot the guy.
But the white mentality, when you see, if you're scared of some black, the white mentality
is
to get out of there. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, why would you anywhere in the area?
Yeah.
And his story is bullshit to me because he said he was on his back and that Trayvon reached for his gun. The gun was in the small of his back behind him. If you're on your back and someone has their knees under your armpits, how do you pull your gun? And how does Trayvon see his gun if he's on his back and getting beat up? That's a lot of shit to do. Hold someone's nose, beat them up. And reach for their gun. And Trayvon had no blood on his hands. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So. No, I think the whole story was, just fudged a little, I'm sure. Because the guy's trying to take care of himself.
Trayvon probably got upset he was being followed and approached a dude to whoop his ass. I remember being in a grocery store once in college, and this security guard followed me from every aisle. He stood there just with his hands crossed and just looked at me. I went to the next aisle. When he went to the next aisle, I wanted to whoop his motherfucking ass. You know, but I was a frustrated teenager and didn't know what to do. Yeah. So I just left the store. But I could understand that anger that boils in you when you're being a citizen, a good citizen, and some jackass is fucking with you.
I was at a vitamin store, and I had a bandana.
Well, Dustin, you should be following.
Listen to me.
You look like Manson with a cowboy. Half homeless, half Manson.
I don't look homeless.
Nah, you don't look homeless. You dress nice.
Yeah,
you
get the fuck out of here.
Ah, nigga, you just thinking Dustin got
homeless. $800 with clothes on. But I was in a vitamin store. I had a bandana on, and the guy was following me around. I just gave my credit card, and I said, hold on to this, because I'm going to walk around and look at shit. You're not going to follow me every time I walk. But, you know, it's like, yeah, people do that.
You were a grown man at the time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
28 or whatever.
Yeah.
Just homeless.
Fuck you, man. Dustin really got offended by
that. That was uncalled for.
You the one with a fucking T-shirt on, Bonds.
Mr. G's Bail Bonds. We put your feet back on the street.
Yeah. It's a great name for an album.
But yeah, so the shit's a shitty situation, and it sparked a lot of race debate and all that goofy shit.
No, it's not goofy shit. It's good, you know. And the thing is, the Rodney King thing was fucked up, and it was a horrible situation, but the guy should have been beaten. And the
Rodney
guy,
King should have been
Rodney
beaten. Not like that.
Absolutely.
Not
hell,
nah. Not like that.
Yes, not like that. Because when it came out, he was on PCP. Yeah, he was out of his mind. If you ever had somebody on PCP, like, hanging out, they're not going to go, yeah, put the cuffs on me. Everything's cool.
But if you see the video,
he's a maniac.
He wasn't even resisting.
Yes,
he was just getting beat.
Well, that's the video that was captured. He was resisting before that. They didn't just start beating him for no reason. Like, he was acting a fool.
Conversations like this make me realize how not adult I am. How I'm, just, like, I'm just sitting here like, oh, shit.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't.
Jump in. Pokemon. It's a fucking show, man.
I love Pokemon. Pokemon's a great show.
You've living. You've hung out with some gangsters and shit. Don't act like you haven't lived a life just because you're young.
You bought that life.
You haven't seen some shit?
I have seen some shit.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here. But Rodney deserved it. And then it came out he was an idiot. And then how did he die? What, drug overdose or some shit, right?
He was swimming in his pool.
Swimming in his pool.
Yeah, drug overdose. Bullshit. Right? He was an idiot. And but,
didn't he get a ton of money after that?
He got like $1 million.
That's actually a problem when you give someone who has a drug problem that kind of money.
Yeah,
you're never going to get better.
Even if somebody, you're still supposed to follow police procedure. You ain't supposed to just have a whole gang of dudes just whooping his ass like that.
And then
you are supposed to be bigger than the criminals that you're freaking trying to apprehend. You have to follow a certain protocol, you know.
Yeah. And your other Super Bowl, OJ, wow, black people were coming together on that, and he was free, and he's innocent, and wow, and that's so amazing, we got one. And then what ended up happening to that guy? He was not innocent, and so that was like, they brought people together out of lies and ridiculous, and death.
And I think we're being penalized for excessive celebration.
There it is. Exactly.
Like the NFL rules.
Yeah. You got fined.
Instant replay. Let's see that shit.
See that shit again.
I ain't going to lie. When OJ got off, I cheered. But it's not that I didn't weep for the Nicole Brown and their family and the poor kid returning the sunglasses died. But then it became like a Super Bowl. Like,
no,
we
understand.
Like Johnny Cochran. Yeah, I'm rooting for Johnny. Get him, Johnny.
OJ, you know, black people, you know, cheering for OJ is the same reason, you know, people in the Middle East cheered when, like, all the terrorism and stuff. Yeah, it's the same kind of thing. Where it's fucked up, but you see maybe where they're coming from. But
OJ got off, but Chad Ochocinco slapped his lawyer's ass because he got off, and then they put him in jail.
Back in jail.
Put him right in jail.
Put his ass.
I thought that was hilarious. That made me laugh a lot.
Yeah.
That is weird that everyone decides to follow these cases, you know, because there's so many cases every day that deal with the same things. I don't know what makes. I mean, OJ obviously,
right? But it's just sensational. Like, just to hear the 911 call when Zimmerman's like, "Yeah, he looks black. I think he's up to something." And then next you know, you hear the kid's dead. You hear him profiling him, and then you hear the kid's dead. That becomes like that tugs at everybody's emotions. That's a drama right there, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's the drama of it. It's the theater, you know? It's
yeah.
High entertainment value. You got race. You got youth.
Yeah, well,
you got a tragedy, fake cop. You got, yeah, you know what I mean?
A fake cop.
Well, I still Florida.
I can't believe there's such thing as a neighborhood watch. Like,
that makes sense,
mind.
But to carry a gun makes
but
no
like,
sense.
But, like, that boggles my mind.
Yeah.
Like, volunteer firemen, like they don't have, like, it just, I don't know.
Well, it's the same as security anywhere. I mean, I feel like, but they can't carry guns.
What was
like
his real job? Did he have a real job, or was he just sitting in his Corolla waiting for people to do something stupid?
Yeah, I don't know what his job was. Well, I know he wanted to be a police officer.
Yeah, he fell
and he was
exam.
Turned down a bunch of times.
He turned down. Yeah, it's that Charles Bronson mentality. You know, he just wanted to hit an itchy trigger finger, but I don't think those people should have guns. Like that's.
I don't either. And he was obviously a messed up individual. I just hate that it encompasses everyone, makes it into all white people. Which, like you were saying, he's not white.
He's Latino. Hands down, Latino. He speaks Spanish. He's Latino. He's not white.
What are the reasons?
Yeah, but if you know a lot of the Latinos, especially the ones in Florida and Miami, they kind of side with more of the white side. Like even when I left Jersey, like Puerto Ricans are kind of like we're kind of in the same boat, but. Blacks in Miami and Cubans in Miami go completely separate directions. They see themselves as a different animal. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So, but a jerk off's a jerk off.
Right.
Like, yeah, of course really, he's a fucking
it's
idiot.
It's one individual.
It's about his race, but it added to it that, oh, this good. I don't know why it hurts when white people don't like us.
That is true, though. Like Latinos in New York are very black. You know, it feels the same almost. Right.
But what is the fear of black men? Do you guys get scared of black people? Allie, you're a woman.
I lived in Harlem when I was in New York. I live on Skid Row.
Yeah, she lived. I moved up to her apartment.
I'm blacker than you guys. Yeah.
She's lived in the hood. Man. I remember that place.
I was scared, and then I found out that black people think I'm black, and now I have.
Oh yeah.
Now I'm just like, hey, well, this guy's messed up. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody was trying to describe Pete to me. He was like, yeah, that black dude that was on Wildin' Out, the light skinned black dude. I'm like, Pete's white, but.
Don't blow my cover, Kyle.
Those lips, dude. Those lips in your Jordans. Jordans in the lips.
You're from Staten Island. You sure your mother wasn't down there with ghost face?
My mom is either. My mom's a liar. That's what I don't think.
And she's cute. But anyways,
I don't think people are afraid of, you know, like that anymore. I'm sure there's like an older generation that is. But comics in general, we're around. So many different races and so many, you know, like all the time. Like, that's what makes it so great. We're able to connect to these people as opposed to just an image on television. Because when I was a kid, all I knew about black people was, you know, TV shows. You know, that's
different
all
strokes.
Yeah, different strokes. Jefferson.
Wait, where'd you grow up?
Texas.
Okay, yeah. Same thing. I grew up in Boston. I had no black people.
So do they become characters to you, or they're not real people anymore?
Yeah.
Because the Jeffersons was a family. Right. You know, and you would identify, oh, that's a family, I'm a family. Hey, the Brady Bunch is a family, but I didn't say, white people like the Brady Bunch.
I was fascinated with black people because of Soul Train. Like, I was like, these are some bad motherfuckers. They're just bad motherfuckers.
That's a little weird.
Seriously, that's when that's when I was like, swag. Yeah, no, that's rerun. I was like, swag, man. Like, seriously, I love Soul Train, man. Every Saturday, I watch Soul Train, and that's how I learn to dress skin boots. Like, the whole thing is this pimping style. I love it.
The first time I really...
do. But what about us as a
Remember the Titans fucked me up. Remember when I still remember the Titans, I was like, these white people are evil. Right. You know, they're so good. Just give them the ball. Jesus Christ. What the fuck's wrong with you? I have a white running back. What are you, stupid?
But what's happening taught me a lot. Like, a lot of lessons learned on what's happening.
Really?
There's life lessons on what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, I remember I learned about piracy.
Don't
you know,
bootleg
from Rerun.
Concerts.
Yeah, bootleg. Rerun went to the Doobie Brothers concert with a big-ass tape player, like, taped to his chest.
These young people have no idea.
You remember that episode?
Yeah,
and then they're like, hey, the Doobie Brothers. And then he's bouncing around dancing and, like, comes out or something, opens up. They're like, Rerun, I can't believe you. And the Doobie Brothers stop the concert. They're like, Rerun, I can't believe you would tape us like that. But that's the thing. Good times. I realized that you can be poor and still have good times.
Sometimes I don't think people's are racist. It's just that sometimes it's an awkwardness. They don't want to offend, and it's like, okay, a black dude, okay, I can speak. What do I say now?
Right,
like,
yeah.
You know, but most of the times, like, I travel a lot, so most of the times, if you deal with it, you kind of have to crack that first shell, And then they'll be like, oh, he's human. All right, it's regular. That's
I think it's just, it's age and extreme location is about well, is racism.
It's also extreme looks, I think, too. Because if you, if I'm on the street and there's like a real thugged out black guy, you know, who looks scary, I'm going to be scared. But if it's a real thugged out white guy who looks scary, I'm also going to be scared.
I'm more afraid of the white kid that's really thugged
out. That way. And then if it's a, same thing, if it's a black guy who's dressed like Kyle, I don't even think about
what
it.
If this dude
if it's a white
jumped
guy
out of the bushes.
Like...
We have a litmus test.
Oh my! This
to be
guy.
Fair, if anyone jumps out of the bushes, that's fair game to be scared.
The
that's
old lady.
Be,
there was
90-year-old woman.
There was two black people in my high school. I went to this Catholic high school, and the thing that I didn't like about my white friends is like they would agree with everything that these two black kids said, no matter what. They're like, oh yeah.
Because they were scared or they were trying to be cool.
They just, I think it's just, cool.
Yeah, that's exactly, I think it's different.
There's a thing about white people where we just want to be liked by black people. Like,
pandering.
I
will say that too. Sometimes I feel it's the opposite. People will be extra nice to me.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Like, do you need anything? Where's
I'm not that guy.
I know Dustin.
Dustin's definitely not that
accommodating. You're not going to pander to us.
I'm not.
No, but
like,
young,
treat you like a real
young
person.
White kids want to be black. Kids my age want to be black. It's really cool to us. Like how, you know, you can walk in.
No, the generation has changed.
It's definitely a lot different.
It's definitely different. But no, my high school had one black kid in my junior high and stuff, and he was the funniest. He was the richest kid. Like his parents would drop him off in like 911 Porsches and stuff. Seriously, he was. He was the richest kid in the thing. It was so funny. He was class president.
He was a drug dealer.
Class president.
Oh, that's funny. We had one black kid in my class too, and he was the best football player.
Oh well, that goes without saying.
I know that was it.
Yeah,
that's how he made his mark.
Yeah.
He was
on
every.
Get out of here.
There was the thing about the two. There was one black kid that was really athletic, and the other one was a nerd. And but like the football team. Still took the nerd. They were like, this guy's gonna do something. We know he's gonna do something for the team.
But I think a younger generation has an abstract view of what racism is. I was watching, trying to watch 42, that movie, Jackie Robinson story. And like, I don't think people realize, certain generation realize how fucked up it was.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, how bad it was at that particular time, even before that and before that and before that, you know, where they couldn't, you know, different bathrooms.
Like, if it was that bad in like 70 years ago, can you imagine how bad it was 100? Like, it's different. It's really different. I don't know. The kids my age, they're very, there's no, like, hate. Like, there's not even, everybody just likes everybody.
I think the younger generations get along better. And they're more exposed to each other. Because when I was in college, everybody was into heavy metal, and I had to find the hip-hoppers. Now you go to college, that's all they're playing is hip-hop. The frat boys
hip-hop
are playing
hip-hop.
Hip-hop
has changed.
Like everybody's playing it. But I don't know if that gets rid of their stereotyping, though. Because I think maybe, because you know, when you're young, you like everybody. And then as you get older, you're like, hey.
Yeah, this guy.
Hey, you get my family away from this shit. You know what I'm saying?
I just don't like dicks. Like people that are just, you know, mean for no reason. And people that are entitled. And people that are selfish. And people that try to use you. That's it. I don't care what race you are. Just don't have any of those qualities. Right. You know, don't be one of those guys. And I don't care who you are. You can be an Eskimo. You can be a freaking
Asian. Even Chinese.
I don't trust Asians.
Someone
does
it.
No, but that's the thing. It's like, you know, that's how it should be. But then there's experience, you know. There's people like Paula Deen was saying, you know, hey, I got robbed and whatever. I got robbed by a black guy. It took me a while to get over it. You know, but
I've gotten robbed by a black guy. A guy, he was like, "Yeah, I have weed." I was like, "Here's money," and then I never got the weed. But that doesn't make me hate black people.
That's not getting robbed. I got gunpoint to my neck.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, I'll shut up now. Very sorry for that. I just couldn't get high that night.
I got choked, like a gun in my face. Yeah, that's a whole different experience.
Yeah. Jesus,
but
yeah,
I just
want to
tell white people, calm down, and we can tell when you're awkward and nervous. We can totally tell.
But there's also black people do a quick assumption to think that we don't like you. And that we think that we're weird around you and think that we have a problem when we don't.
Yeah, that definitely happens.
You know,
people are like, oh, these people. If somebody looks at the ground, you're like, hey, he don't want to make eye contact with me.
Yeah. But they're looking for shit. I feel like sometimes black people are looking for shit.
But I do know that definitely happens.
Well, I get it all the time. Yeah. They assume I'm in a cowboy hat. They assume I'm from Texas. They assume that I'm going to have
this. You're going to ask me what time it is, what I look like.
But I have been places where you could tell the whole energy changed. Like I was in New Hampshire during a big snowstorm, and me and Q walked in. It was late, and there was a girl at the front desk. And then I said hello, and then I guess the guy behind heard my voice. So then when I went to the, went around the corner, I came. He came and sent her in the back. And then I, you know, I'm looking around a little gift shop. And then when I come out, both of them are standing there typing at the computer really fast. I'm like, it's 4 a.m. during a snowstorm. Yeah. Who's that fucking busy?
Yeah, but Q's a little thuggy though. Like he has a thuggy like air. I could see that. He's not, but he puts it off like he is. He puts it out there.
No, Q's friendly, man. He talks to everybody.
Yeah, he has almost a lisp. I feel like he's the least threatening person.
Yeah, Q talks
threatening. How you going?
No, but, you told me he's sucker punch. Like, he's just kind of got a thing where he's just like, you know, I feel it. I like him a lot. But he cracks
people. He gets people open a lot.
Yeah.
You know what, though? To me, almost, like, you're in Connecticut, you said, or New Hampshire?
New Hampshire.
You're in an area there's probably not a lot of black people.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, right, it's just going to be different for them to see. They don't know how to act. It's the same, like, when
people do a double take, like, whoop, whoop.
Well, when I first moved to Harlem, people did that to me. You know, it's the same. It's just seeing something different. It's not necessarily, like, I'd have one or two guys that was like, you don't worry about, like, they would kind of, I wasn't worried about anything.
How often did you get hit on?
Almost never.
Really?
Almost never. I'm too skinny, I think, for the, because my roommate got hit on all the time.
What?
She had, like.
I know a black guy that loves skinny white.
No. No, almost no one hit on me. They were nice. People were nice. People were like protective,
like,
which was cool.
I thought you were a cop.
I'll
hit on you when you go.
She's FBI.
They thought it was bait for something.
Yeah,
like, we're not going near that
girl.
This doesn't feel right. Yeah. Something's not
Thumbs
right.
Thumbs up with that. But yeah, people just don't know how to act when they see something different. So I'm like, I don't think they were. I mean, maybe they were scared, but maybe they're just like, well, all right, we're
just
not
a little
used
to it. It was just so awkward. I'm like, why are these people? And now all of a sudden they're both there. Typing their little hearts out.
I like how every noise you make now makes me think of Zip, old Zip
code.
your typing noise is
I don't know. I think race will change, but it'll also go back. That's the thing. It starts to go forward, and then it always comes back.
Nah, but I'm feeling a weird energy. Like, I feel like a lot of white people are resentful for all the race talk, and then you see what's going on in the hood, and it almost, and the same thing's happening in England, too. It just seems like we're a fucking menace to society. You know what I mean?
And some of you are, and some of white people are, and some of whatever. I mean, that's just the fact.
There are bad black
people. There's a fact, yes.
But I'll tell you, though, like, when I see a lot of these kids in Chicago, and I see me at their age, you just want something fun to do, some people to influence you. You look up to the older guys, and they, like, when I was growing up, our parents had jobs. We had factories. People were working. Now there's nothing. I think this generation dropped the ball when it came to parenting on some levels, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Because I lived in a black neighborhood, and we didn't have the beef and the energy we got now. I went to a White Castle in Chicago, South Side, man. The energy in there was so, if I'd have lit a match, I think the place would have blew up. You know what I mean? That's how you could feel it. People were angry, selling DVDs. It was just desperate.
No, but the South is like that too. You got a lot of out of work people, yeah. You know, just in my grandparents and my whole family always, you know, on government money and stuff like that, and just nobody's making money, and legal shit's happening all the time. Everybody's methed out and drunk and crazy, and
call,
you know,
Mr. G's bail bonds.
Yeah.
We put your feet.
Yeah, it's everywhere. It's in the white community. It's in the black community. Yeah. It's just not. It's no excuse for any of that energy.
But
lucky for you, you found the arts. You found somebody that believed in you. You had a teacher once, or, you know, a couple of teachers or somebody that maybe geared you in the right direction, I'm assuming.
I had older brothers who was into the
street
life.
To talk
to
you.
I was like, you know what? I don't want to go to jail.
Man. See, that's good, though. It has the opposite effect on a lot of people.
Like, you know,
people
won't go
just
that
going
way.
I am the only person in my family that does not have a record. I'm the only person in my family that's never been to jail, never been to prison, never been arrested. The only person. And in a long line.
Are you the
family.
Youngest?
I got two brothers,
well,
and
now.
My mom, and my dad, and, like, you know, and my grandparents. Like, it keeps going.
Yeah,
like, it's a long line of, like, you know. And I treat it like it's a PhD that I got. You know?
At least I didn't go to jail.
Yeah, but that's what it is, you know. It's like a whole different thing where it's like people just don't get it, you know. It's just, but you can just because you come from a fucked up environment, you can make something of yourself.
Yeah, the problem too is now I think like everyone's walking around with expensive stuff on them, so it's so much easier to rob someone and get, like, there's so many more people out to just take your iPhone as opposed to, like, you know, when our parents were kids, you had to rob someone for their money or whatever. You didn't know if they had anything on them.
Really
now you know people have some.
Now you could just swing by on a bike and snatch up
and
a phone.
And you know you're going to get a couple $100.
Back in the day, you had to have like a group. All five of you would have to hold down somebody and go through their wallet. Now you just need a tricycle and you swing by and take a phone.
And you know they have vending machines that'll just take your iPhone like and give you $300.
Oh, really?
Like, so someone's...
I thought you meant that'll just take like vending machines that'll rob you.
Like,
where's this?
Yeah, they have one in Jersey Gardens Mall.
You can steal someone's iPhone, go to a vending machine.
You want to get rid of your iPhone, you just put your iPhone in there, they'll scan it.
Dude, that is
and then they'll give you cash for it.
That should not exist.
That shouldn't even exist.
That whole area is going to turn into the most dangerous.
The mall or something?
They have them in the malls. They have one in Jersey. I was just somewhere and I saw one in the mall in St. Louis. Yeah, you put your iPhone in. It scans your phone.
That just gave me the idea. I'm going to fucking do it.
So dudes go Apple picking. They'll snap somebody's Apple iPhone, take it.
Apple picking. I love that. An apple picking. You know, some Granny Smith? Nah, man. We get
that. Nah, man. I want that 4S.
I-5, bitch.
I want that 4S.
That I-5.
Yeah, for real, man.
You got to take a picture of that. And, like, that's...
I
want to see that.
That's crazy.
I want to see this vending machine.
That photo will get a lot
machine.
Of likes.
I was in Japan and they had vending machines you could get dirty panties out of. I thought that was crazy.
Is that true? I've always heard that.
No, that's true.
That was...
They were like vending machines that like women put their dirty panties in. These perverts love putting, you know,
so
I don't know what they do.
Get?
Snip
how much
them
does it
or
cost,
whatever. I lost about $300 that week. No, but they put the thing in there and the panties come out. That's hilarious.
In Canada, there was pictures of babies with Hitler mustaches saying, don't let this happen to your kid. That was a PSA for parenting. Like there was a little baby, a nice little cute baby.
Don't grow up to be a Hitler.
A Hitler mustache, and they were like,
"Is anti-Semitism?
Do you want this to be your
kid?"
And everybody was like,
"You mean raise him right so he doesn't be."
But like everybody in Canada is like, "Yeah, we don't want people to be like,
you don't want your kid to be a really bad artist." Yeah. Like that. I don't even understand that. He was pretty successful, though.
Yeah.
Okay, not in the arts, unfortunately.
Dude, he had a great run. Great run.
All right. Hitler jokes. That'll bring down a room.
Yeah.
That's when everybody gets quiet. Around. Everybody
throw
gets
in
quiet
Hitler.
When
thanks,
somebody
Pete.
Drops
thanks,
the
Pete. Thanks for throwing that in the mix.
So, Montreal, did you guys go to any of that?
All right, we'll do it. We'll go to a musical break, come back, and see if we can get Judah Friedlander on the phone. Right. Hick Hop Radio. Welcome back to Hick Hop Radio. Got a special guest call in, a very funny champion. We call him the world champion. Been on several TV shows, been all over the planet. Ladies and gentlemen, Judah Friedlander. Yay.
Woo! Judah.
World champion.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chapin. You're a good American. Kyle there, too. It's
Kyle Grooms is in the building.
Yes, sir. What's up, Mike?
I knew he was there, dude. I can see, even though I'm not in your studio, I can still see everything perfectly.
Nice. You going to the cellar cruise today?
And then I'll be able to hear you perfectly.
Okay. Kyle, we met. Yeah. He was asked if you were going to this cruise thing on a comedy club that I won't promote. So,
I'm going to be at the Comedy Cellar Club.
Okay. All right. We don't promote the cellar on this show. I'm kidding. Judah, we'll just get right to it. So, I noticed on your Facebook and kind of going around the internet that you put up a petition to kind of go against comedy clubs dropping checks on comedians during their set. And, you know, for people that don't know exactly what that is, that's, you know, when the comedian's on stage and you have to pay your bill and you pay for the drinks. And then sometimes the show is not over and the comedian on stage has to kind of take the brunt of what's happening, you know, during that check spot with people talking and paying bills. And then, you know, comics usually hate it. But, you know, so go ahead, Judah. What do you think?
Yeah. So basically, the check spot or the check drop. Basically, what I want to do is make the comedy club experience better for everyone, and I think ultimately it will be better for everyone if everyone really gives it a shot. Basically, when you go to a comedy club as an audience member, it's different. you know, than other entertainment experiences. Like when you go to the movies, you you pay at the beginning. When you go to a restaurant, you pay at the end. But at a comedy club, you pay quite somewhere in the middle during the show. And it's completely disruptive to the show. It's much harder for the comic to do well. The audience isn't able to pay attention, so they might be seeing their favorite comic, and then they have to stop listening because they have to focus on trying to pay their bill. It's dark. They're trying to keep it down. People, that might be noisy figuring out their bill. And it can be complete chaos, and it can last anywhere from 5 to 1 minute or 30 minutes. And it's something that comedy clubs, for the most part in this country, in Canada, have done for years, where they make the audience pay for the show while the show is going on. And it would be a much better show if the audience paid at the end. Well, they're not being interrupted.
Can I interject real quick?
Say one quick thing, Judah. What about the young comics? Like, a lot of times, like, I have check spots that I give to the young comedians that don't have a lot of credits. They're brand new, but I feel like it's a good opportunity for them to get up on stage, you know, during the checks.
In New York City and maybe a little bit in L.A., like, on the road, the check spot is known as the check spot because call it the headline, the main comic you're going to see who has the check dropped on. But in New York City, when you're going to the show and you're seeing anyone from 5 to 10 comics tonight, there's usually one comic who gets worse than everyone, all the checks on. And it usually overlaps two comics. But yeah, that one comic is sometimes a newer comic, and it's a little like thrown bold. I think we can still drop the checks half the show, but if you want to give a new comic a break, give them a short spot. Give them a 5-minute spot. You know? And then this way, they won't have to struggle through this month. It's actually just definitely do a lot better.
But I
don't think it will take away. I think if you're concerned as somebody who might be running a club or owning a club, or as a comic, as a young comic whose only spot they can get at a New York City comic club, it is that check spot. So if clubs can hold aside a short check spot for the new comic who was getting those check spots, that would be cool. You know, that would be really cool.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I would say, I mean, it is a customer business, and sometimes you have a guy that is, you know, he's ordering three or four drinks during the show, like he wants to keep drinking and whatever. And there is an aspect to, you know, trying to like get people out before the next show. So I see both sides to it. But, you know, I think we're at, like you said, on the road, I think it's probably the worst. Like if you're headlining, you know, you're 45 minutes in, you got to do an hour and they start dropping. I think that's unacceptable. I don't think people should have to deal with that. I think that's where the MC should come in. Like after you do your set, have the MC come back up and eat some checks.
I also think it can be done better in the city. I really do. And I think it's worth a shot because I won't, you know, there's two clubs in the city who don't drop checks and they both get it done. So there's proof that it's possible. And all I'm asking, I'm a lover. You know me, I'm a lover. I'm a like, let everybody get along kind of guy. I'm not a, oh, it's the comic versus the club owners, the bookers. I'm not into that. I'm with working together because my thing is, even in New York City, if let's say clubs were able to figure out, because there are two clubs in the city who don't drop checks on the off. But if other clubs start doing that, the audience is going to see a better show. And I think that's the lead, ultimately, to them coming back or them telling their friends about it. At better business, comedy clubs are going to make more money, and I think it'll be better for every company. So,
yeah,
it's worth a shot, and I think it's something where the wait staff might have to. I know most of the wait staff is great, but they might have to, you know, it's changing things. People are very afraid of change, and it's, but I think it's something worth giving a shot. Kind of shoot it down, fry it up. Like yeah. Even on the comedy clubs are willing to like, all right, tonight business is a little slow and we're only doing one show, let's drop it out next wait that practice.
Yeah.
Saturday.
But sometimes the clubs don't have control. Sometimes people want the check, and that's going to happen on occasion. You know, sometimes people just want the check early. That happens a lot. Like people, comics don't realize that.
Right, and like there's like the factory in LA. They do things. They're the only ones I know that do it this way. They take a cash cover. Like before you can enter the room, you have to pay the cover in cash, and then they make the audience pay as they go for every item as they go.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying to do it that way, but it's less disruptive than that giant text drop that just, you know, messes up an entire show.
Yeah, I mean,
I think the best drop the checks after the show.
No, I agree. It just, you know, I think only like at a Caroline's where I think it really matters. Because with me, all the shows that I run, I have a check spot. The comic, the young comic gets to get up. Then all the checks are done. And then the headliner comes up. I don't see any problem with that.
It's almost like a joke I have where it's like, you know, all comics that are middle, they're the feature act, they want to become headliners. But after headliners have been headlining for a while, and have week after week of check spots, they actually wish that they could become middles again so that they don't have to get those check spots.
Yeah, but you're the champ. You know what I mean? Like, you could play anywhere. You can play anywhere. Yeah.
He does it. I'm fighting for the rights of people.
You are.
Who may not, you know, who just might be great Americans.
No, you are a great American, and you're a hero, and I'm behind you all the way. I just think that, you know, and I think you should be, you know, like you're a theater guy,
no,
in my opinion.
And it's great, and I tell you, it's great to hear your opinion, because one of the reasons I started the petition, and I mentioned in there, it's like, this is not a us versus them, and you can even, if you want to sign the petition, people can sign it, and then there's choices where they can list if they're a comic, if they're a pub owner, if they're a booker, if they're a podcaster. producer, a radio DJ, a waiter, a waitress, or a manager, or just an audience member. Because I want to, you know, I just think it's like sometimes the country, not just in comedy clubs, but in so many issues, it's so divided. And people just need to, like, communicate more. And people are often afraid of communicating on their own. Because, I mean, if there's the one guy who complains about the check spot and it's always complaining about it, I mean, hell, even if I was a club owner, I'd be like, all right, this guy's getting annoying. Let's just give someone else that spot. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But, yeah. Well, I think.
And I want to say this on behalf of owners and bookers. It's like, if I owned a club and if I was, booking a club, I wouldn't want people coming out telling me how to run my place. One reason I have my own place is just I don't want to have a boss. But so I'm not telling people what to do. What I'm doing is I'm just trying to open up the conversation in a safe way so people won't have to, like, be afraid of. I don't want club owners to be afraid of being labeled the bad guy. You know, yeah. Like, oh, or saying I'm bad. I don't want comics to be afraid of being like, oh, if I say something, I won't be able to work that club anymore.
Well, yeah.
And we can just hopefully just make stuff better.
Yeah, I think, you know, the problem with comedy is, you know, like the coalition. Like we, you know, the coalition was great. The money raised, and it got raised, you know, $10, $15, everything was great. And then it just went away. Like, I think the coalition should come back. We should have meetings once a month. We should unionize a little bit better and should have more. Because I'm in the middle. I'm on both sides. I'm, you know, and so I have a lot to say that I think, you know, sees both sides. But I think the coalition should come back and we should raise issues of, you know, people getting, you know, shitty money on the road and people not getting hotels and different things like that. Like, we should all come together. But we never do. We did for that one split second and then it just went away.
Well, I agree with you, and there's something else to be said to that coalition, because the guys that put that together, you know, I mean, there was a few main guys, and you know, the work they put in such an unbelievable amount of work, and they're the ones who kept a lot of it going, and they also did that pre-social media. You know, there was no Twitter then,
yeah.
There was the internet stuff, yeah. But there wasn't Facebook. It was, you know, and so that's a lot harder to do back then. But I think things can maybe be a little bit easier now. And I'm not saying that I necessarily want to even start a coalition or anything, but with this one for right now, I'm just testing the waters. I want to just focus on one issue of how I think it could be better for anybody. I want comedy clubs to do great business. You know, I want to make as much money as they can. The capitalist society we live in, and that's good for them. So, and I just think, and I want the audience to see the best show they can, and I want comics to be put in a situation where they can give their best show. That's all I'm trying to do. So hopefully, you know, hopefully what my hope is that, you know, I hope people sign it. I hope people sign it. Certainly, if they agree with it, I'm not going to force anyone to sign it, and I'm not going to hold anything against anyone if they don't sign it. But I do hope if people want to sign it, they sign it. I hope fear doesn't keep them back. But it's never good to have fear in your life, and I do hope that comics who are above that level, like very famous comics, who don't have to worry about a check spot anymore, but the big theaters or arenas, I hope they step up and stand up for other comics too. So it's not just the comics who really need it, but it's just standing up for people in general. That's what I hope.
Very cool, Judah. Thanks for fighting the fight, man, and standing up for comics' rights. And appreciate you seeing both sides, because I think a lot of people, you know.
I'm standing up for clubs, too. I love comedy clubs. I'll say it again. I love comedy. I just believe... Like I said, I've never owned a club, but I've worked in them. I hope things are a little more complex, so there's more nuances than what we're actually saying. But I do know that several clubs in the country, not many, but several, and they're busy clubs, and they're able to not drop checks during the show. So I don't know all the intricacies of how they do it, but I know they do it.
Which clubs?
I'm asking people to try to work a little harder.
No, I don't want to promote them.
Give it a chance.
Very cool. All right, champ, we got to go, man. Anything you want to plug? Where are you going to be this weekend?
Well, I got to go solve some crimes. Okay. Leaders just showed up. So I'm Judah World Champ on Twitter. And the website for the petition, if anyone wants to check it out, is dropthecheckspot.org. And dropthecheckspot.org. And I will be adding more stuff to it. I'm going to be videotaping different people from all sides, you know,
cool.
Comedy business. Just to, you know, hear people's voices and get those voices out there.
Yeah, and I'm going to start a petition. Every comic should run a show at least once so they can understand.
I'll tell you something, Justin. That's a great idea. Because I'll be honest with you, even from my perspective, you know, so often that's something I haven't appreciated. That's something I've gotten to appreciate a lot more in the past 5 years. I would just go up to a show, go on, get out, and then I realize, well, these people will put on a show by themselves, but, like, they find a bar and then they get that room, and then they actually book comics. They have to deal with all the comics that, you know, for those spots. They got to get the microphone, get the speakers. They actually put one on. That's so much work, and they have to all be applauded for that.
I appreciate it, Judah. All right, champ, thank you so much for calling in on Hick Hop Radio. Check Judah Freelander out, and thank you so much, Judah.
You got it, man. All right. Awesome.
Take care. All right.
Later.
Bye-bye. Wow, okay.
Yeah, that I'm surprised Judah's taking up that fight, man. I didn't think, you know. Check spots don't bother me that much. I don't. Sometimes I don't even know when they come. I just fight through it. You know?
Yeah, it's
a challenge for yourself, too. I kind of like
and it. And I be ripping so hard.
Now, you do rip hard, but you have an ineffective style. That's what's good about you. Is like you have a thing like you ain't nothing going to affect Kyle Grooms when he's on stage.
Tell me more about me.
but it is. It's nice. It's a style. It's a confidence, whatever. It's just those guys that get all rattled when shit like that happens. And like, what am I going to do? Nobody's paying attention to me. And blah, blah, blah. And it's just like my jokes, and this joke always works. And, you know, I mean, Petey's one of my interns, and I've watched him grow over a few months doing checks and stuff. And we've talked a lot after the sets, you know, different things. No, but you've figured out, you've adapted to it. You figured out, like, you can't just walk through your set. You got to take beats. You got to make them come to you. But that's, you know, but all those things are just going to help you become a better comic at, another level. And that's what, you know, shitty spots do for you. That's what a bar show does for you. That's what a fucking one-nighter in a shitty town does for you. Like, all of this just encompasses and makes you a better comic. And the thing is with Judah, I understand where Judah's coming from. Judah's a star. He's been on a lot of shows. People actually come out to see Judah for his name. So he's on stage. And he's got fans, and he's got people that want to hear his jokes uninterrupted. And then all of a sudden, he's in the middle of a joke, and then it's like, "Hey, how much did you pay for that? What is that? I didn't order 3 beers. What are you talking about?" And then he can't do what he can do. It breaks his rhythm, and he gets frustrated. And you know, people dropping on Judah are idiots, in my opinion. I would never drop on Judah. I would never drop on somebody that somebody's there to see. Like, if it's a big deal for that particular comic to be in your club, you shouldn't drop on them. Like, when Charlie Murphy comes down, when certain people, I don't drop on these people. When Chappelle would come down at Boston, I would never drop, but even think to drop on a guy like that. And so the fact that Judah's getting check spots is ridiculous. Like, that shouldn't even happen. Like, that's called a shitty club. Whoever's doing that doesn't know how to run a club properly, because certain stars should be treated a certain way. That's how people continue to come back, because that star's happy. They come back to your club. The word gets out, and then you get, you know, that ball rolling. But that's, you know, that has something to do with particular clubs, because I would never do something like that. And
you
drop
checks on your HBO special?
Yeah, and I run half of comedy in New York. So it's like, I would never do that. But yeah, that's the thing. That would be funny. That would be hilarious.
It is just part of comedy, too. That, like, it's, and people complain. It's one of the only art forms where people are drinking during your set. They're allowed to have, I mean, people try to make them not heckle, but you don't go to the ballet and see people, you know, yelling shit out at the dancers, and you don't see people getting drunk and being, it's just kind of part of what we, the craft we do.
But it's also people don't, you know, go to the opera or go to the ballet, and they're sitting there, and then all of a sudden the star of the show goes, "Hey, nice shirt, stupid!" like they don't get it. Like that's they don't get insulted when they go to, you know. So it's like it's a catch 22. It's
I would
a give
go to the opera so much more if that happened. That would be amazing.
Be way more fun. Be way more.
The opera would get way bigger crowd.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like it's so it's like
right.
A,
it's
know,
a trade, exactly.
It's a trade. It's like they get fucked with, they fuck with us, whatever. It's all good. But you know, I. Just, but that's the thing is, I am on both sides. You know,
agreed. For
10 years
absolutely.
Straight, I did comedy. You know, just straight stand-up comedy, and then now I run rooms and clubs and stuff. And so it's like I see different sides of it. But I think people need to be careful to. You know, the thing is with Judah, it's like, don't you have like a movie to write? Like I don't. Like, does he have a TV show to star in? Like, you know, I get it. I think it's awesome that he's fighting the fight, but it's like, really? Like with the, I don't know. It just felt like when the Coalition came out, like I felt like that was a fair fight. It was like the comics should be paid more money.
I'm going to start a petition. I think comic clubs would give us 2 free drinks at every show.
What no. comedy club doesn't?
Some of them don't. Some
what don't. Comedy club doesn't?
They don't give you food, or they'll give you half price on the food, or yeah. chicken wings.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
The seller now is being making comics pay for drinks. Like, that's ridiculous. You know,
did something happen? I feel like there's usually one incident that caused the whole change
thing.
Of rule. Like, you're like, all right, who fucked it
the
up?
Greg
who did
Wilson.
It?
No.
Usually, that would have been... That's why in L.A. no one gives you free drinks anymore. Greg showed up, and they're like, all right, that's over.
But, no, it's... I don't... You know, I think it's just... You try to take care of comics the best you can, you know? And the thing is comics got to understand the comedy clubs and what they have to deal with. It's like certain comedy, you know, you have a budget, certain comics, like with me, I have a certain budget. I can only pay this guy and that guy. I can only do this and that. But when it comes to the extra perks, I try to do my best, you know, to make people, if they want food, they want drinks or whatever, but don't go crazy, you know? Respect the place itself. Like, it's not a place to get bombed and act like a fucking idiot. Yeah. But if you want a couple of drinks here and there, that's cool, but don't... But don't, you know, disrespect it. Don't take advantage of it. And that's the problem, is you get some idiot that acts like, you know. But I think comedy clubs try to get back the best they can. And comics should give back as well. Maybe try when you're on stage. You know, like, don't get mad and tell the crowd to go fuck themselves. Like, have some professionalism yourself. Yeah. And the comedy clubs will professionalism back to you. You know, so it's like, it's all give and take. But anyway, it's a great art whatever, and I think the comedy clubs are a great place for us to be seen. There's not a comedy club on the planet that didn't have a comedy club that helped them get to the next level. Like, there's the reason that now it's different, maybe a little bit with the internet or whatever, but most comics in the past 20 years that are really famous had a comedy club to thank for that, because they had a place to work out. Richard Pryor had, you know, the Comedy Store, and, you know, Kinison, and all these guys came up, and Seinfeld had the Improv and the Comic Strip, and, you know, all these places allowed them to become great comedians. So I don't know, I stand behind the comedy clubs, but I think a lot of idiots run comedy clubs too, so that's part of the problem. Yay! All right, I guess we're gonna wrap it up.
The intern brought to my attention a story in North Carolina.
Where intern has a name.
What's your name again? I totally fucking forgot.
Petey, man. Petey, come on. Don't do that,
idiot.
Dude.
No, I'm sorry, man. My bad, dude. But Petey was telling me that...
You know, he's like your biggest fan, too.
He is. Really, and then you just
that really
like
hurt his feelings.
Just ruined it.
It's good, though. No, it's good. You need to humble him. I always tell him that. I like him humbled. Beat him up. Sorry, slap him around. Humble him.
Don't take it personal,
go,
man.
Go. What? What do you got?
Thanks for putting me on the spot, you fuck. I tried to get away with it, too.
Yeah.
Not remember the guy's name. It's 2 Pete's. Okay, I got it. Yeah. He was North Carolina. They're having a white history. Some guy on a float had a white history day.
About fucking float. Time.
Is it think every, they should have a white history?
Is it every day white history?
That's what
day?
I'm saying.
How about a Native American History Month? That's what I want. That's what needs it. There's not a day. There's not a Crazy Horse Day. You got Martin Luther King Day. There's no, like, Native American Day. There's not one Native American Hero Day. Nothing. Not a bank holiday. Nothing. Not one fucking holiday that represents a Native American.
What about when the Braves make it to the playoffs?
Oh. I support Zimmerman. I really believe that was.
What about when the Redskins get first round draft pick?
That's what I'm saying.
What about the Braves? Who else?
All right, we got it. We got
Indians.
It.
Indians.
We got it. We got it. We got it. You, just
Wow, they never won.
So what happened with the White History? What are they saying? They don't.
They have a float and
it was a 4th of July.
Like slavery didn't exist.
For White History Month, hug a white person. Because I hear white people say, "Oh, we should be able to get a White History Month. Why is there no White History Month when you use
a black history? We got BET. Why can't we have WET?
White History Month is every day. White people are on money. Yeah. So there you go.
Nah, I agree. It's like
every time I make a purchase, you know, I'm celebrating White History Month.
Just watching baseball is White History Month.
Yeah.
No, I agree with all that, but I do feel the Native Americans get the shaft. That's the only, I will always fight that. I feel like they are just cartoon characters. They are treated like scum of the earth. Like, nobody gives a shit about
Native
Indians.
America. Yeah,
they Indians. Do not care. They don't even have a voice. Whenever there's a voice, it's like 30 seconds
on the
internet.
When I see an Indian, I buy him a drink.
Goes away.
Well, there's no public thing, but isn't there a huge amount of money that goes towards scholarships and stuff for Native Americans? I thought that supposedly if you're like 1/115th Native American, you can get a scholarship for college.
There's scholarships for everybody, for every different races and different whatever. I'm talking about the public appeal.
Yeah, you know, there's no public. Believe me, I realize that, yeah.
Yeah, there's scholarship programs. Yeah, there's shit like that, but it's not, you know, it's still not enough.
Yeah. Actually, I guess that most get it just because there are no Native Americans left. So the only people trying to get the scholarships get them.
Yeah. It's just a write-off thing for people to feel good about themselves. But I'm just saying for the image of the Native people, yeah, it's just really horrible.
I think we should sign a petition to get F Troop back on the air.
You so old. I don't even know what you're talking about.
F Troop. You know F Troop.
F Troop. What are you talking about? F Troop, is that what you're
The Indians, the Indians, they were the first Americans.
Crazy horse. I'm going to kill a motherfucker.
I drank
but that was black people.
A 40 of crazy horse.
Crazy horse. Yeah, that's so racist. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
All right, folks, we've had a good show here on Hip Hop Radio. I feel like we've covered the gamut of race, stand-up comedy, Montreal, check spots.
So you guys got meetings after Montreal?
Meetings?
Yeah.
AA
meetings.
A few meetings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go to LA for a couple of days, say hi to people, and say, oh, thank you, bye.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I like meetings. Cool, man. All right, so anything you guys want to plug? Allie Breen, where are you going to be? What's going on?
I'll be actually at McGuire's this weekend.
Bam!
In Long Island, if anyone wants
to. Is that guy still there? John?
No, it's owned by the governors and brokerage guys now. They took it over.
Nice. Thank God. That guy was horrible.
Yeah, everyone says so. I didn't really know.
With the guy that owned brokerage?
No, the guy who
owned McGuire's that they bought it from. I guess he used to be
John.
The worst.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You ever play there?
Nah, no. I played brokerage. I never played McGuire's.
Yeah, the governors, too. It's all the same.
Yeah, they took it over.
That big Italian dude, what's his name?
Yeah, well, it's two different guys. Mark is one of them, and the big Italian guy is Jimmy.
Yeah, he's kind of like,
he's like mafia.
Give him a little gobble of goo.
He's the only guy when you come in, he gets mad if you don't drink. He's like, have a glass of wine. I'm like, no, I'm going to perform. Yeah, what? Have a glass of wine.
It's like, my wife, only... my son, my dear.
Everyone.
Little
Petey
and John Payne upstairs.
Hey, bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah, he's that kind of guy. He's a good fella, that guy. Yeah.
Right, any websites or Twitters?
Oh, yeah, and at Breen Screen on Twitter.
Breen Screen.
Breen Screen.
You got the cutest smiling. Comedy.
Don't make it weird.
Other than yours, Kyle.
We should make out.
Obama babies. Pete Davidson, what's up, man? What are you doing? What's going on here? Whatever.
Well, tomorrow I'm in Dewey Beach, Delaware.
Fuck yeah, you are.
At the Starboard, and it's a free show with Chris DiStefano and Carly Aquilino. So if you want to come to that, that'd be great. Or see me at Helium. I'm opening for Attell the 22nd and the
24th.
Nice.
In Philly.
Nice. So
that's about it.
Cool. I'm playing a Denny's bathroom in Jersey. And
that's a good gig. How'd you get
the entire show is a check spot. I'm just, people are coming through the door, giving the check over and over and over. You can catch me. I'll be at the world's famous Greenwich Village Comedy Club, New York Comedy Club, and Stamp New York, and the Comic Strip all this week. And you catch me at Twitter at Dustin Chafin, 1F. Please don't do 2 Fs. And catch my website, DustinChafin.com. Buy a CD on there, all that fun stuff. Kyle Grooms, what's up, man?
Well, for the next 2 weeks, I'll be in and around New York City. You could go to kylegrooms.net to see my schedule. August 14th, I'll be at Syracuse Funny Bone. And then August 16th and 17th, I'll be in Houston at the Hard Rock Cafe with Allie Breen.
It'll yeah, be on come the to show. That show.
She's going to get the check spot.
Yeah, we're going to do an early check spot.
For all you kids out there, do the checks. Be men. Be women. Man up. Cowboy up. Whatever. Just do it. Do the checks. Don't complain. You'll be a star one day. All right, thanks for listening to Hip Hop Radio. Thank you, Petey Dubois.
Thank you for having me.
I was talking to him, man, the intern.
Okay.
Because he needs to be recognized after Kyle forgot
Kyle
his name.
Kyle forgot his name.
Poor Petey.
Petey, what's your Twitter? What's your Twitter? I'm gonna make Kyle
what's
follow
your
you right now.
What's your Twitter, Petey?
PD's jokes.
PD's. You're so black. PD's jokes. Twitter. I love PD. He's my man. All right. Rock and roll, hip hop, hee haw, whatever. Shun, thank you for listening. Hip Hop Radio. Be good to each other. Bye bye.